But as we've heard this morning, more counter-terrorism raids have happened in Melbourne. And Muslim or non-Muslim, if you're a parent, how are you feeling about the disturbing headlines of recent weeks? Headlines about young Muslim Australians taking up the cause of radical jihadist groups like IS, about raids on suburban households housing teens and 20-somethings, about the 18-year-old Victorian man shot after he stabbed counter-terrorism officers last week, and about attacks on mosques and Muslim Australians. As we know, passions can be very powerful when we're in our teens, as can that feeling of disaffection. But what would you do if your teen turned to religious extremism in search of a sense of purpose? What issues do parents need to be talking about at the family dinner table right now when it comes to faith and fanaticism and identity and indeed about social media and perhaps about racism? Joining us this morning on Life Matters is Ali Khatri. He's a youth worker and spokesperson for the Brisbane Mosque at Holland Park. We also have with us on the line Rafa Chalabi. She's a mother of three sons. She works in a business in Western Sydney with her husband Kassem. And we also have with us Silma Ikram. She's a mother of six. She's a former school principal. She now runs a training school called Diversity Skills, and she's a member of the Australian Muslim Women's Association. To the three of you, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Natasha.
Thank you.
It's a very complicated conversation, but a vital one. Silma and Rafa, let me start with you. Perhaps Silma, as a mother of six, how have you felt about the news that some young Australian boys and men and women raised here, schooled here, are taking up the jihadist cause? How does that make you feel, that sort of reportage?
Well, obviously, it makes me, as a mother and a grandmother of 10, actually, very concerned. Very concerned about the excitement that this is obviously generating amongst young people. When you're young, and a lot of young boys go through a kind of a rebellious phase, this is where we have a lot of our movements around the world, which begin with young men. It's exciting to think that something new is happening, something which is using emotional language from very historical and very important aspects of state, and using the flag and, you know, a caliph and all this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, young people don't often stop to think about how accurate these claims are.
Yes. Rafa, I wonder how you're feeling as a mother of three sons.
Of course, it's very concerning as well to me. But you know what I feel is that the problem is being exaggerated by the media. I don't feel that really so many children or so many youths are being radicalized or going off to fight. Like, we have a very, very big community in Sydney, like maybe probably close to 300,000 or 400,000 Muslims. Like, honestly, how many are going overseas to fight or are taking up arms? Also, one other thing, like, it may be true that a lot of people, you know, are going to mosques and, you know, attending religious classes and taking a stricter version of Islam. But does that really make them a terrorist or ready to go and fight? I really don't see that there is a problem, but what's happening is that the media is exaggerating the problem and making it out to be a real issue when it's really not really much. And yeah, those people who are, you know, doing these things, have a history of mental illness, have a history of crime, family issues, being marginalized by society and our community. And it's only like just a few. You can probably count them on the one hand. But our whole community is being ostracized for the actions of a few.
It's a strong point that you're making. What sort of conversations, Rafa, has this prompted around your dinner table?
It has a lot, you know, because my children, you know, are teenagers, and I've got a 23-year-old, and he's very concerned. He tells me, "Mom, how many people are going off to fight? Look at how big our community is. It really is a non-issue. It really is a non-issue, but the media is exaggerating the problem." And I tell them, "No, this is what's happening. I just feel, you know, we're being ostracized as a community for the actions of a few who have mental illnesses and other issues."
How do your boys go on? Yes, Silma.
Yes, with Rafa, I have to agree with her in terms of the media coverage. You saw that Media Watch last night. There has been a lot of over-exaggeration, and claims have been withdrawn about incidents that are related to apparently extremism when they're not. So I think the media does have to take some responsibility for inflaming a lot of the issue. I believe there is a significant concern I think the numbers are very small. We only have to have one major incident here for everybody to be alarmed. And they have, and we've already had this very negative backlash on our young people, which has ongoing effects between our communities into the future. So I agree with her, but I think at the same time, you know, we do need to address it. There is an issue.
And that's what we want to talk about partly today too, and have it in a conversation in a calm and clear way, careful way. Ali Khadri, you're a youth worker and a spokesperson for the Brisbane Mosque at Holland Park. What have young people told you about how they're feeling about those headlines, about the stories that we're seeing reported?
Look, before I answer that question, let me put the numbers to what Rafa is saying. There's about 60 people who have traveled overseas and 100 who are supporting it directly or indirectly. So we're looking at 160 people who are possibly radicalized.
Do we know those numbers for sure, though?
Yes, this has been reported in the media, and AFP and ASIO has been saying this for a long time. So, you know, that's 160 people who have either traveled, 60 have traveled, and 100 are actually radicalized. So 160 out of over 500,000 Muslims in Australia is a very small number. So to say that radicalization within Muslims in Australia is widespread is a way overstretch of the real issue. Mm. Now, when I talk to young people, their complaints mostly are about, you know, feeling alienated, not feeling part of this country and this society. A lot of these young men grow up in Australia. They are not close to religion as they're growing up. And at certain point of time, when they don't feel part of the country, they look for association with something. And unfortunately, the propaganda run by the terrorist organization attracts them. So I always say to people that, look, when a non-Muslim Australian feels alienated and marginalized, they join gangs, bikie gangs, and so on and so forth. If a young Muslim feels the same way, they're less likely to take up a life of crime as such, but they get closer to the radical propaganda which is spread across the world by the terrorist organizations.
Let's consider social media, because it would appear that some young people, a small minority as you're suggesting, are turning away from mainstream mosque communities and to social media instead for their religious interpretation and to learn about Islam. Does that raise concerns for you?
Yes, it definitely does. I mean, look, a lot of these young men and people unfortunately target and blame mosques for spreading propaganda, and they oppose mosques. But if anything, mosques are the part of the solution, because a lot of these young men don't have knowledge or in-depth knowledge of Islam and Islamic law and Sharia and so on and so forth. So they go and set up a center, listen to YouTube lectures by radicals who themselves have been practicing for a year, 2 years max, and don't come to the mosque, and they suddenly start feeling and seeing Muslims, mainstream Muslims, mosques, imams, and so on and so forth, as weak when it comes to, let's say, standing up for foreign policy or raising their voice when it comes to, you know, conflict in Israel-Palestine, when it comes to a Syrian regime killing 200,000 people or Iraqi regime being corrupt. And then they see that, okay, you're not talking about foreign policy, you're not standing up against oppression, you're not talking about that, so we're not going to listen to you about religion, we're going to go and set up a center and listen to somebody who's got very limited religious knowledge but always talks about this in an inflammatory manner.
And certainly that happens on social media too.
Yes.
And Rafa, I think your sons have been quite active at expressing their views on social media.
That's correct. You know, I do tell them, for example, that Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, would always take the option, the easier option when presented with an issue or an interpretation of the Quran, to make life easier for a community. And that's, Islam is a religion of peace. Islam is a religion of harmony. It's not about, you know, of course, that's what makes them really, really mad, that they're being taught at home that we are a bad faith, and then they're being portrayed as the media as violent.
Mm.
That's what's really hard.
So how have they been interacting on social media? Because I gather they try to express their opposition to extremism. With what result in the social media space?
Well, a lot of people, you know, because they're having a valid argument, they're asking us for proof of peaceful sayings in the Quran, and they've been saying that, or trying, for example, some people might misinterpret the verses of the Quran and take it out of context. They've been trying to get the right way and the right interpretation, or to tell people that these, you know, messages are being taken out of context, they're being interpreted in the wrong way, and that's the wrong way to interpret them, and showing them the right way, as much as to their ability, because they are very limited, they are still very young, And but with our help, they are doing that.
Ali, the Grand Mufti of Australia has warned young people not to trust Sheikh Google or Sheikh YouTube, as he's cleverly described it. And so clearly he recognises this as a real problem. Do you feel that anything can be done about that dialogue that young people are finding on social media? Because that's a tricky thing to try and intervene in.
Look, what we have tried and done in our part, in Brisbane at least, is we have tried to modernize the way we deliver our sermons and lectures when it comes to Holland Park Mosque. Now, Holland Park Mosque is a 108-year-old mosque, and we made a Facebook page last week. So, you know, we were lagging behind when it came to that space. And a lot of young
landing
men
right in the 21st century now with that Facebook page.
So exactly.
A 180-year mosque, did you
108,
say?
108.
Yes, I was going to say, So a Facebook page, how do you hope to utilise that, for example?
Look, we're engaging with young people. They're asking us questions. We are posting sermons on the Facebook page. We have a quite modern website now where people go and listen to the sermons. So the young boys who don't want to come to the mosque can listen to the proper version of Islam, the true Islam, which overwhelming majority Muslims follow, in at their home through Facebook, through our website, and ask questions. And we receive so many questions that it gets hard for Imam to answer these questions on social media. Sometimes people are shy to ask a question when you're sitting in front of an Imam and around 100 people. But it's easier to ask a question when you are anonymous on Facebook or on a website.
What sorts of questions?
Look, all sorts of questions, you know, questions about their personal lives, questions about, I had a question a couple of weeks ago, as in why mosques are not, getting politically active and representing the Muslim community to the politicians. Now, you know, our response was that it's not mosques' job to be political, but having said that, there are a lot of Muslims who are actively involved in politics. There are Muslims who talk to politicians about our issues all times. And, these things need to be spread out. And that's what we do now on Facebook page. We go out, we make statements, against extremism. There are some young men who have come up and said, look, we're not condemning extremists enough, for example. And we've come out and shown them that, yes, we have. Grand Mufti has, and imams in the local mosques have.
The problem.
Back to Silma. Ikram, thanks, Silma.
The community doesn't really have sufficient resources to tackle this problem. I really applaud what Holland Park Mosque is doing, and I wish all of the mosques would do that. But it is very difficult when you're under-resourced. A lot of the mosques operate on donations. They have very poorly paid imams who do more out of love for the religion than any financial incentive.
So just to put it back to you, though, Silma, then, and I can imagine that many Muslim parents don't want to feed the stigma by feeding these conversations, but as you've pointed out, there are genuine concerns for parents as they see these stories of young Muslim men and women becoming radicalised because of interactions over social media, perhaps being predated upon by extremists who are overseas. So how do families cultivate the space to have this conversation without stigma?
I think there's a very, very important role for fathers to play. Unfortunately, a lot of in the Middle Eastern culture, it's the mothers who raise the children and the fathers who work. And it doesn't work that well here in Australia because you don't have the extended community to support as much as you do in other cultures. So, because a lot of families are more isolated here. I think it's really, really important that fathers really step up to the plate and get actively involved, talk to their sons, take their sons out, spend time with them, listen to them, and talk to them about alternative viewpoints, and also for mothers to really, as much as possible, watch what's happening with their children on the computer. So I think this has been a problem that fathers have unwittingly fallen into, that they tended to leave a lot of the child rearing and the close personal relations to, you know, to the mother and to the community. But I think that's something that we can't afford to do now. Fathers really need to be actively involved, listening to their sons and showing them what really Islam is all about. And when you mentioned about radicalization, I think there's a process that occurs. It's not like because you read social media, you become radicalized. I think there is a feeling of disenfranchisement. There is a feeling of disillusionment with what's happening. And it's a slow process where a lot of young people feel fairly frustrated, particularly because of the media. And also because those who haven't been so successful for various reasons, maybe family breakups and all different kinds of issues, are more susceptible. It doesn't mean to say that they're radicalised since they get on. But it just means that they're more susceptible.
We
have to care for them.
That's a vital point you're making, Silma, isn't it? Because clearly there is something in this about a search for identity, about a search to feel part of something bigger than themselves.
Yes.
Some kids find gangs, as Ali pointed out. Or drugs. Some find both, or they find a more extreme vehicle.
That's right.
Go ahead, Ali. Yes, look, when I speak to these young men, most of them have got rough backgrounds, like when it comes to, you know, family breakups, when it comes to coming out of countries which are war-torn. And if somebody is a 10-year-old and has seen war, let's say in Afghanistan or Iraq, and then he comes and grows up in Australia, he cannot easily forget that war. He cannot easily forget that killing which he's seen at such a young age. And a lot of times these conversations are still happens in the family about the war because they have extended families in those countries. Now, when they can't find or feel part of this country for any reason, then they get scared of their own safety and security, and they're afraid that the same thing might happen to them here because of what they've seen and what's happening overseas. Now, it's important when it comes to the mosques that we invite these people, and the people, wider community, also takes part in the mosque, because imams, Silma is right, imams are not equipped and they don't get paid enough to do this. So wider community has to donate their time, come to the mosques and talk to these young people, because there's a gap between the leadership and the youth as well, which needs to narrow down.
Ali Khadri is with me this morning. He's a youth worker. He's a spokesperson for Holland Park Mosque in Brisbane. Rafa Chalabi is with me. She's mother of three sons. She works in a family business in Sydney. And Silma Ikram is with us, a parent of six, a workforce trainer, former Islamic school principal. And you're with Life Matters here on ABC. And we're talking about, in a sense, the parents' response to some of the difficult headlines that we've been reading this week about young, a small minority, to reiterate, a very small minority of young Muslim Australians taking up the cause of radical jihadist groups like IS. Rafa, thinking about that point that Silma made about the role of mothers and fathers in the family, I wonder how you think about that and that dialogue that both parents can have with their children.
Yeah, what I do explain to my children, you know, people who have taken the wrong path, you know, have been exposed to negative influences and they're doing the wrong thing. I tell my children always and always, we need to be effective members of society and of our community, that as Australians we have rights and responsibilities, and also that being a good Muslim does not stop you from being a good Australian. We want to be part of Team Australia, but the problem is that we're not welcome. I feel that we're not being welcome to be part of Team Australia, even though we want to. We want to have our rights and we want to have our responsibilities. But unfortunately, you know, I do find, you know, it's becoming a very, very difficult battle. But I keep telling my children to persevere. We are good people. We are doing the right thing. Our religion is the right way, and we have to, keep at it.
Just you mentioned religion, and some will be curious to know if these sorts of events raise genuine concerns for you about the vulnerability of your faith to fanaticism, especially amongst young people. And I'm interested in all your thoughts on that. Rafa?
I'm sorry, I don't quite understand. If my children will be exposed to fanaticism?
Well, whether there is something in the faith that makes young people more vulnerable to appeals from fanaticists. Perhaps I'll pick it up with Ali and then I'll come back to you, Rafa.
Okay.
Look, let me answer that question. Islam is a 1400-year-old religion. The terrorism, the modern terrorism, is about 15-year-old phenomenon. So for overwhelming majority of the history, Islam was peaceful. If anything, during the Dark Ages in Europe and during the Crusades, when Christianity was used for radicalization, Islam went through a period of enlightenment and preserved a lot of knowledge from Romans and Greeks. So there is nothing in Islam as such which attracts people to radicalization. But unfortunately, the geopolitics of the modern world and post-colonial era is something which is influencing these people. If anything, in my personal opinion, Islam is the first victim of all these problems, because these terrorism or these crimes are committed in the name of Islam, which is a very peaceful religion, a 1400-year-old religion, which is misused by few for geopolitical reasons or anger or frustration or whatever you want to call it. So that's why I don't think that there is something in Islam which makes people radicals now.
Silma, how would you respond to those concerns?
Oh, I 100% agree. Absolutely agree. This is, as Ali says, a more of a recent phenomenon. Look, when people feel disaffected, religion, because it's close to the heart, is easy to abuse for political purposes. We have another problem that's happened, and it's part of the colonial issue that Ali raised, that is that we've lost a lot of our very strong scholarship in the community. Islam was part of an administrative structure, and people would study it deeply and long in order to gain positions in administration. That's all gone. We operate under a Western system, which is where there is little encouragement to really engage with the scholarship of Islam.
With what consequence do you think?
Well, it means that we have less real knowledge about what Islam represents, and it is easier for those who are ill-informed to stand on a platform and say Islam is this, when the majority of people haven't really had the training to be able to straight away recognise how wrong they are. So this is a problem that the Muslim world is trying to address.
It's very confusing, isn't it? Because I think all people, Muslim and non-Muslim, would be saying, well, what does Islam represent? And how do you have that conversation with your children?
Look, well, that's why there's a lot more scholarship is happening around the world at the moment, and there is a move internationally to try and reclaim the linguistic Arabic, which gives us the knowledge about Islam, the access to the knowledge of Islam, and to increase the training of Islam. So we have Muslim schools that are growing. But there's also been another slight problem in that a lot of the imams were trained through Saudi Arabia, which had a very narrow interpretation of Islam, a more recent phenomenon. And that also has combined with the lack of deep scholarship to basically mean that we're not as well informed within our own community as we should be. A lot of people try to address that.
Thank you for making that point. Can I just bring it back then to your advice as two parents and a youth worker for parents at this time, particularly Muslim parents, but also non-Muslim parents? Rafa.
One thing I was going to add to that is
that
the Quran is a text, and it's a very old text, and it's open to interpretation. And a lot of people, there is nothing in Islam that makes people radical. It's just that people open to interpret things in certain ways, and they find proof. Like some people like to take a stricter version of Islam because they feel, you know, that the harder they live on earth, the bigger the rewards will be in the afterlife. And that's where they choose to be the harder option. But like I said, it's an text that some people choose the stricter version of interpreting it.
So your advice to parents, Ali?
Look, my parents, my advice is one simple advice, that get Muslim kids, get your kids to go to the mosques and learn the proper version of Islam, learn the actual only true version of Islam, the historic version of Islam, which gave us mathematics, which gave us algebra, which gave us Arabic numerals. So we need to go back to the fundamentals of Islam and reclaim Islam from the radicals and extremists who are using a very fringe interpretation of Islam to commit crimes. I mean, the terms like jihad have to be reclaimed. Jihad is not about killing people. Jihad is an internal struggle. And I bet you a lot of Muslims, young Muslims, only think of it as a physical form of fighting, but it's not. It's actually claiming, fighting your inner struggles, whether it's against drugs, against any addiction, or against anything bad.
But Silma, young people are going to rebel, aren't they? And they're going to rebel against the mainstream, as they've always done.
Yes, and I think that's where it's very, very important for parents to engage with their kids. Don't trust them simply because they're playing with their cousins that they're safe. Go and check who they're talking to, listen to them, engage with them, and particularly fathers, spend time with your sons and guide them properly. And that also means that parents need to be a little bit more informed about Islam. It's not just a culture anymore. It is a very vibrant religion with a wonderful message, and we need to reclaim it. All of us need to reclaim the wonderful part of it.
And understand those geopolitics as well. Look, terrific to talk to you, all three of you. I really appreciate your time and your thoughts and intelligence on this issue. Thank you, Silma Ikram, Rafa Chalabi and Ali Qadri. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Take care. Bye.
Thanks so much. And Silma Ikram is a former Islamic school principal, parent of six, workforce trainer with an organisation called Diversity School Skills. Rafa Chalabi, mother of three sons, works in a family business in Sydney, Western Sydney. And Ali Qadri, a spokesperson and youth worker at the Holland Park Mosque in Brisbane. Would love your thoughts about this too. It's a vital conversation, but a complicated one, as we've acknowledged. On our Facebook page, go there or on our website or our listener feedback line 02833 1430, and we're on Twitter at RN Life Matters. We'd love to hear from you.